everyone. Welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Jeeps, and of course, hearing about how fantastic clutches are in Toyotas, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs. My name is Tyler, and joining me in the studio is the one and only Almost Jeep and James.
Almost.
Almost. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. It's for you, it's a crazy week. For me, it's not quite as crazy as a week. But yeah, life is going well.
Do you want to have a job for a week doing shipping logistics? just kidding. It's actually getting easier now. So
yeah, sure.
Last week, though,
I could only work for one more day, though, yeah, because I'm supposed to be out on the Rubicon on Thursday.
Ah, bastard.
So
must be nice getting to go out on the Rubicon.
We'll see. My tea case is still in parts. So
gotcha. you're gonna be out there Thursday through Sunday?
Saturday. We're coming back on Saturday.
Gotcha. I'll be out at the Highlanders Poker Run this weekend.
Oh.
Which is on the Rubicon. They go through Wentworth Springs, yeah, through Loon, right?
Yeah.
So
on what day? Saturday?
My plan is they're doing the poker run Saturday.
Okay.
If I get Kermit back by then, then I'll be out on the poker run on the trail. If not, then I'll probably be hanging out in camp with my camping trailer, drinking my sorrows away.
On Saturday?
Yeah.
And camp is at Wentworth?
No, it's, God, I forget the name of the camp area they use. It's not Wentworth. It's not Airport. It's another one pretty much like, I want to say 4 or 5 miles before Airport Flats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, something like that. But anyways, I'll be out there.
Nice. So, well, maybe I'll radio you and find out where you're at.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I'm not sure, but, and maybe we will go into this later, but I believe the group I'm going with is planning on doing a through trip.
Oh, okay.
So I might go all the way through.
Cool.
We'll see.
Cadillac is, well, we'll get into it. Yeah. Okay. So cool, man. This is a Thursday episode.
Yeah.
Hopefully everybody enjoyed Monday's episode. I've already gotten a few pieces of really cool feedback from it.
Good. Yeah, I've gotten one as well. Mm-hmm. I think let's hold these and do a follow-up episode.
Oh, for like questions or like, yeah, feedback from that episode?
Yeah, questions, cool, and feedback, mm-hmm, from that episode. Because there's a few things. I'm listening through the episode, mm-hmm, and there's a few things that I believe that I have some follow-up suggestions already as,
gotcha,
well. So
okay. I haven't listened to the episode yet. So, I mean, other than, you know, my skimming through and stopping every 30 minutes of the episode during editing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I need to listen to it because I think that from when I was doing the editing, I think there's a couple places where I was like, oh, we could have, there's some better
information. We could have elaborated on, yeah, on these. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's sort of how I feel.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like we did a great job of breaking the ice.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so much more that could have been discussed.
It's so hard because like we try and keep the podcast to around an hour and 15 minutes. Never happens, but that's what we try to do. And like that trail, there's just so many different things to do on that trail that it's really hard to keep a podcast within a reasonable amount of time.
Sure. Absolutely.
It's kind of like when we did that, what's the difference between ham radio and CBs for a 2 minute Tuesday? We have to, yeah, explain the differences and positives and negatives within 2 minutes. And it's just like, you can't do it.
Yeah, you can't. And that's like the number one comment is like, you guys miss so much. And yeah, I'm like, I don't think you understand the concept of this video.
Yeah, right.
It's like, we're not going to cover absolutely everything and you, yeah, can't in 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, yeah, I think doing a follow-up to that video would be great. I also,
to the video or the podcast?
Sorry, the podcast.
We could do a follow up to the video too, if you want.
No.
Okay.
My brain.
We have to keep it under 2 minutes.
We'll just do the 50 follow up videos.
Yeah.
Gotcha. That'd be funny. Yeah. So we have a follow up podcast episode planned for, from Monday's episode about, you know, planning a trip to the Rubicon. Let's see. We also have another Rubicon episode planned with our two favorite people.
Yes.
Our two favorite Rubicon people, I should say. John Arnes and Merlin.
Yes.
So that is back in the planning. We're getting details kind of figured out right now. And stuff is rolling right along.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's definitely moving on our end. And it is tool month this month. So we do have some winners from the first week of tool month.
Oh, that's right. We're done with the first week already.
Yeah.
Shit.
Well, and week two is almost over now.
Week two is almost over.
So the first week was the screw extractors.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had, 19 entries?
19 entries. Yep.
19 entries. So you had a
26% chance of winning.
Yeah, that's pretty phenomenal. Mm-hmm. So we did a random number generator of the 19 entries, and we got 5 numbers.
We did.
And the numbers were?
6.
Oh, you're going that way?
Yeah.
I'll go the other way. 13.
17.
18.
And 9.
We're such dorks.
I like how we're really good at audibles, though. Calling audibles, just dealing with it.
There you go. So, and I think depending on the way you have the pictures organized in your on your Instagram account, those numbers would come up differently, and probably differently per person.
Yeah.
But when I was looking at the page, was number 6 was Jacob Glaghorn.
Yes, it was.
Did you go to 9?
We went
did
to
you
9
do it in order
that.
For me so I didn't have to? Okay, that was very thoughtful.
The name list is in the numerical order from ascending order.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
We'll just go this way. Congratulations to Jacob Glaghorn, yes. Charles Locke, Matt Gardner, and Corso Caravan James, who we are actually, I'm not quite sure exactly who you are. We've communicated many times, but you're not.
Last name isn't listed anywhere, so we're not sure which James you are. There's four or five that we deal with.
And then there's one more on there, but I don't know if we wanted to.
We haven't decided if he's going to win yet because his entry was more a personal attack, I feel like.
Yeah.
And so we had talked about disqualifying him on a previous podcast due to his very abrupt and personally attacking personality. But he also came up as a winner. So we're still trying to figure out, and we're also debating on holding it for ransom.
Ooh, that's not a bad idea.
So we may have to hold it for ransom for like some latte powder mixes again.
Oh, I was going to think of Lorenzo.
Oh, for make him still Lorenzo, we'll trade. Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So anyways, that should be clue enough as to who it is. I don't even want to say his name because I feel so... not absconded. What is the
insulted?
Not insulted. What is the word accosted? I feel so accosted by his post. So
I like it. So those are the 5 winners right there.
There you go.
We also do have a tool month this week going on for the hex keys.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the magnetic hex keys. I believe it's the standard, metric, and Torx versions.
Mm-hmm.
And then we should be getting, the T-handles as well for winner.
This one may ship out a little later than the rest of the prizes.
Yeah, we have the hex keys in stock in right now, but we don't have the T-handle. So you might get 2 shipments, or you might get one containing both items. We'll see how things play out.
You know what I really, really like about the magnetic hex keys that wasn't talked about when we went over them with Kieran Corey?
What?
They shoot lightning out of them.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. Big thanks to B. Murph for drawing up that image.
Thank you, buddy.
Working with us and making everything. Uh-huh. And and so I talked about it a little bit on Monday's episode. I went back and I looked at my hex keys.
Mm-hmm.
My hex keys have the ball end on the long side.
Okay.
And then the complete hex side, or the short side is hex, not a ball version.
Okay.
Right. So, yep. Which makes sense to, you know, when you really want to crank the bolt down, you know, you want that good tight fit. So where the ball end isn't as tight, but it's easier to maneuver.
Okay. So
I don't think
do both sides shoot lightning bolts out of it?
No, only the magnet side, which is the long side.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay. So that is the giveaway for this week.
Yes. One winner.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to copy the photo that is on our my Instagram and your Instagram, Snail Trail 4x4 or 4x4 Toyota Tyler, and Monday's icon for the podcast, or go to the website and copy that photo for that same podcast.
Yeah, I apologize. When we first launched the episode, I was dumb. And that's me over here. Me, woohoo! And I forgot to put up the picture that we made. And so, yeah, I got corrected very quickly. And so that's nice. Now fixed. If your podcast feed is showing the original picture, which was Kermit in front of the Rubicon Trail sign, just refresh your podcast feed for the show, and it should come back up with the correct image. And then you can save that image or go to the website and get the image.
So, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was curious. I saw that, but I wasn't going to correct you because I wanted to see if anybody posted it.
Oh, yeah. Some people did. Some people had posted before I corrected the thumbnail.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I didn't get the thumbnail corrected till like 10 p.m. at night or whenever I texted you about it.
So if we go to the hashtag, there was nobody in it, though.
In the hashtag?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said there was like 11 posts so far.
No, there's 11 posts, but none of them are of that, of the Kermit in front of the Rubicon sign.
Oh, gotcha. If somebody posted the Kermit one, gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense. I'm on board now.
And we just got another. Jacob Gleghorn.
Oh.
One of our winners from the last, from the extractors.
Look at Jacob.
Just posted right now the hex keys.
Look at that, man. Podcasting in real time, but like...
But it'll but be not. A day, two it's days a, late.
2 days late. When you hear it. Oh, man, that's funny.
Let's see. What else do we have going on? We've got two more weeks of Tool Month. And the big guns are coming out in these next 2 weeks for sure.
Yeah, they are.
So you really do need to pay attention. The next week's is going to be massive and a lot of fun. But you're going to have to work
huge.
For it.
It's going to be huge.
Huge trucks.
The largest single giveaway we've ever done. The largest. Huge.
Single item giveaway.
Single item giveaway. Yep. Yeah. Pay attention. The next one's going to be big.
Well, in the following week is multiple items, but add up to roughly about the same cost. It's insane. Fun stuff coming.
Yeah, fun stuff coming. Some really cool stuff from Gear Wrench. Thanks again. It's really fun working with Gear Wrench and Gear Wrench Corey because we get to do some really awesome stuff for all the listeners, and they're all about it, which is really, really cool. Makes it that much sweeter. So make sure you guys are, you know, considering Gear Wrench and Crescent and any of the other Apex tools whenever you're looking at buying new tools or replacing anything in your garage, in your shop, in your trail kits, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
They have literally everything. So
pretty much. Yeah.
And if you're looking for something and can't find it, message GW_Corey on Instagram and he will find it for you. Yeah.
I messaged him today and he said that they don't make it.
What?
Yeah.
Whoa.
But it was a very obscure item.
Gotcha. Thing.
Combo.
Item combo. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it was the splines.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So I messaged him because there's these really cool splines inside of a socket instead of like hexes, you know, like a 12 point or a 6 point or 12 point. There's these versions of that are splines that are in the pass through set.
Yep.
And they have them on their 120 degree box end ratcheting wrenches. So I was curious if they made that version in sockets.
Regular sockets, like regular 3/8 drive, half inch, quarter inch, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That would be sweet. That'd because be awesome. those splines in those sockets are metric, standard, 6 point and 12 point.
And Torx.
And Torx too?
I believe so.
Jesus Christ. So you can get 5 different uses out of one socket, which is pretty phenomenal.
Right.
Which is one of the reasons why, which is mainly the big reason why we're such a big fans of the pass-through socket sets. So,
yeah. Absolutely. Speaking of things to come.
I was waiting for you to continue so we didn't hit this, Jimmy.
I was waiting for you to laugh.
I was holding it in. Okay, so continue, sir.
Iron Man 4x4, one of our good friends. It looks like I am going to be doing a Tundra lift With an Iron Man 4x4.
Nice, with the foam cells?
I'm pretty sure that we're going to choose the foam cells.
Nice. Yeah.
So I'm excited to get my hands on those and test them out and check them out and see how everything works and feels and goes together. I'm sure it goes together phenomenally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm stoked to be able to continue working with Iron Man 4x4. Mm-hmm. And excited to do a Tundra install. Nice. I haven't done many of those, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun to get to test out their foam cell. Hopefully we go with the foam cell version. But
are you going
to
shoot it before installing it?
I thought about it.
Uh-huh. I mean, like shooting it like with a gun, not with a camera. Okay.
Yeah. No, okay. I'm definitely shooting video. Yeah. I think it's going to be a great how-to video because it's a slightly different suspension. I mean, the suspension's the same, but it'll be really neat to do some testing before and after with the foam cell setup. Mm-hmm. But I don't plan on necessarily shooting it with a gun, because it's not going to be mine.
Okay.
If it was mine, I probably would and be like, look, I shot it with a bunch of times with some slugs.
And then you could just leave it on there on the rig and have it as a showpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
That's crazy.
And it's still together and it still works. It's fine.
Yeah. I really like the idea of those foam cells at first I was kind of like, it just seems like a cheap and seems lazy like a gimmick. Option gimmick.
Yeah.
But like after kind of explaining it for like rock crawlers, like I get it. I get the use of remote reservoir coilovers and stuff like that for high speed desert stuff.
Right.
It just makes way more sense because you're actually getting airflow to cool off the reservoirs. In rock crawling though, you don't get the airflow to cool off the reservoirs.
Absolutely.
And so I'm kind of like, the foam cell just makes so much more sense in a rock crawling application.
Right.
And for like most overlanding applications too, because you're not putting a shit ton of high stress on your shocks. Mm-hmm. But anyways.
Unless you're Truck Norris.
Unless you're Truck Norris. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to say blown away, but it was just a big eye opener.
Yeah.
That I took away from that.
I learned a lot about that foam cell setup from our interview. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like a really, really great, different thought process than what is out there on the market. And everybody, you know, because everybody looks at, oh, I want to get a specific brand with reservoirs.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't really need it.
Yeah.
You know, and you could get this other, you know, an Iron Man 4x4 foam cell version and you'd be just as happy. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to worry about figuring out the packaging and putting your reservoirs next to your exhaust and, you know, all these other things that people do that are just silly.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We'll see. I need to talk to those guys and see if they have.
They don't make a 16 inch shock, foam cell shock.
Bummer. What about 14s? I can make a 14 work. So anyways, that's going to be fun. I'm excited to see, the Tundra install and how it comes out. So.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. I don't foresee it being any time in the immediate future, but it's, in the process. It's in the works of hashing out some of the details.
Cool. Let's see. What else do we got? We have next month.
Hold on. Sorry to interrupt. I want to also say that it was really cool to work with Iron Man 4x4 because I was in communication with the people that were the main people at Iron Man 4x4 and the customer, you know, and we were trying to work together and figure it all out. And they're like, quit being middleman. Like, let me just talk to the customer.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to them about, are they planning on doing bumpers? Are they planning, what weight loads are they planning on running? Yeah. How are they planning on using this rig? And they had so many more questions.
Interesting.
Than what I was just going to go like, hey, what do you want to run?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm stoked that they take it to that level. They care about what the point of the vehicle is going to be because that's really going to make the best ride quality for the user.
Yeah.
You know, and that they, you know, they, I don't know if they saw that I was doing a poor job or they just wanted to do a better job, you know, and they took it over on themselves and are doing the correct thing for the client. So
I had a similar experience, this weekend that we'll get into as well.
Okay.
But, it just, that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Having the user experience, there we go, UX again, right? Having the user experience to really care about what the customers are doing and what they're using your product for and like taking the time to dive into that rather than just saying, okay, what do you want? Okay, here you go. Here's your order.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So it makes all the difference in the world.
And I heard Stellar Built said the same sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like they can sell you any kit that you want,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to also tell you why you probably should or should not get other kits.
Yeah, agreed.
So it's neat to have business owners caring about the outcome for the client mm-hmm. more than the dollars coming in the door.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And that, I don't know if it's just a small business versus big business kind of thing. And, or if, you know, once you start getting to such a size of your business that the upper management isn't really involved at the ground level anymore.
Yeah.
There's just a massive disconnect there. And then you start losing that customer service aspect. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't figured out what the correlation is there yet between businesses that do that really well and businesses that don't do that really well.
I think it's just, my guess is that it's a separation between the owner
mm-hmm.
and the core values and the person that's running now customer service, right? Probably. It's probably had that core value when the owner was running part mm-hmm. of customer service. And then when the owner or, you know, the person that ran that department left or moved away or mm-hmm. does something else, because you, as a business owner, individual business owner, you have wear multiple hats.
Yeah.
And you've got to let stuff go to let the business grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you let that side of the business go, you either did not implement the appropriate customer service tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Or you let somebody else run it and just take it and they put only their care
own,
about
their put own their values own spin in
on it. And it wasn't the business.
I think originally. That's a good, here we go. Business podcast. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen.
Right.
I worry about that. You know, running more flight. My biggest fear and concern is that we lose the customer service core values. Right. Obviously I'm coming to the point where I'm like, I need to let parts of the business go and hire good people that do those things really well. I don't think I'm ever going to let go customer service though.
Yeah. That's going to be the first thing I let go of.
Perfect.
I suck at it. I know I suck at it. I'm a very personable guy, but when you start like, I don't want to say like bad mouthing my product, but mm-hmm. just like, it brings up an anxiety to me a little bit.
Oh, totally.
And I'm not, and I like never have had anxiety before. Mm-hmm. But whenever I see an email come in from a customer that had purchased something, I'm like, oh crap. Like, what am I going to have to do now?
You get PTSD, you pull out your paper bag and start breathing heavy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's just one of those, you know, like I know the answer. I know how to solve the problem. I know that like, mm-hmm. you know, I know how to please the client.
Yeah, you
the
do.
Customer, uh-huh. but it's just it's like, you know, beating my head against the wall sometimes.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I don't know. It's a customer service is such a tricky thing. And you need to do it well, but in order to do it well, you have to have so much patience Absolutely. And understanding.
Yeah.
And it's that's one of my fears is that, you know, customer service would get away from Morflate at some point and it's not done well anymore. And you get away from those core values. And I think that's a good spot to put it. So,
right.
Yeah.
I have a good example that's short.
A short? Okay. I'm ready.
Yesterday or the other day, not yesterday, probably last week, I sent out a bunch of panels. Mm-hmm. Well, I accidentally switched two people's orders.
Oh.
Right. Uh-huh. And so I sent a panel to the first individual that was completely a blank panel. And I sent a panel to somebody else that had a small custom etching on it.
Okay.
And a TRD logo custom etched panel. And so the guy that ordered the custom etch panel didn't get it.
Yeah.
And so he's like, hey, the guy that wanted the custom etch panel received a blank panel. And he said, actually, I really like the blank panel.
Yeah.
Can you just refund me the $30 or whatever it is? Yeah. And I said, sure.
Yeah.
Here you go. The guy that got the TRD panel said he likes the panel. It looks great. The quality is fantastic, but he wants a blank panel. His goal is to remove all the logos off of his truck and everything.
Okay.
And he doesn't want, you know, a TRD thing on there. And I said, okay, absolutely. You know, my mistake. Uh-huh. I will send you a corrected panel out and I'll have a return label in there. You send the old panel back.
Uh-huh.
And then in that email, I said, you know, I do unofficially offer a version of the panel with the snail armor text removed.
And just the snail.
And just the
picture.
Snail.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have less of a logo on there. And he's like, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. I didn't consider that. Huh. That'd be awesome. I really appreciate you even bringing that to my attention.
Nice.
Thank you so much for all the, you know, for thinking ahead and, you know, thinking about what I want, you know. And so I sent him out that panel.
Yeah.
Gave the other guy the refund.
Yeah.
And so sooner or later, I should be getting a panel back.
Nice.
So, but yeah, so it's just, you know, thinking about what the customer wants.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Anyways, all right. I think I beat a dead horse now, so.
Nice. But that's what we do here on Snail Trail 4x4. We beat dead horses.
Yes.
The dead horse beating podcast.
And don't give presents or gifts winners to Jeep owners.
That's true as well. I'm kind of concerned now what B. Murphy's going to come up with for beating dead horse podcast.
Don't give him the idea. Actually, looking at that list of winners for the screw extractors, everybody on there is a Toyota owner except for that one.
Oh, nice. Sorry, that was one of the rules we had on the contest. We just forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
You got to own a Toyota to win it. Mm-hmm. So,
and previously owning a Toyota doesn't count.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's funny. All right, so what else do we got, man? I don't think we got too much else. Should we get into how the weekend went?
Sure.
How my trip on the Rubicon was?
Let's do it. How did the trip on your on the Rubicon go?
It went terribly.
Yeah. You mean you didn't, you know, have a great morning and wake up in the sunshine and pack up real quick and do 10 hours to Rubicon Springs, like you said on Monday's episode?
No, I didn't.
So what happened?
So you remember how I've been having this like clutch issue thing where
it was making some weird noises
and like in Moab, it stopped like fully disengaging. It would kind of stay engaged a little bit. Now it's kind of having to do a little bit of rev matching to like, I would have to like push the clutch in and do a little bit of rev matching to get it to shift.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was like, I don't have time to swap out a clutch here before the trip. So I'm just going to run it for this weekend. And before going on the Rubicon trip, and, I made an appointment for Monday after the trip to take and drop off Kermit at a mechanic.
Okay.
To get the clutch swapped out and diagnosed and everything. I've had people write in saying, hey, check the bracket that the clutch pedal and the pedal assembly is on. It's probably broken. That wasn't it. Apparently, second gen 4Runners are known for that bracket tearing.
Oh, interesting.
Which then makes none of your pedals really work correctly.
Yeah, the bracket's flexing.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Okay.
So that wasn't it. I rebled the clutch lines again after Moab when I got home, and that was still not, hadn't fixed the problem.
Did fluid come out?
Yep.
Okay.
So fluid was coming out, but it was also kind of having air come out a little bit. Like I couldn't get it fully bled. And so I figured I might have a master slave cylinder issue.
Or a cracked line,
but like I wasn't losing fluid. Right. So I don't think it was a cracked line. And so I was like, huh, all right, well, you know, I'll try and figure this out. And like the other thing that's going on is when the clutch pedal is pushed in, so the clutch plate is disengaged from the flywheel, and when the transmission is in gear, you can hear the clutch spinning on the flywheel.
You can hear it grinding.
Mm-hmm. So you can hear it rubbing. There's something, you can hear noise coming from inside the bell housing.
That's not good.
That's not good, right? It should be fully disengaged. Those two should not be touching when the clutch plate is disengaged. And they were touching, which then makes the transmission spin, right? Because it's grabbing the flywheel slightly, which then means as you try to shift, you just grind gears.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The synchros aren't able to fully catch up. Right. And so I found out that in order to get it to shift from park, I could drop it into neutral, wait for the transmission to stop spinning, and then quickly jam it up into first with the clutch disengaged, right? And then I could shift from there using the synchros and a little bit of rev matching. So
couldn't you also have turned your vehicle off, put it in gear, and crank it and it'll start that way, and you'll start moving?
Yeah, you could have done that.
Okay.
Yep. That's kind of what I was doing. And I was like, I'm just going to get through this trip. I know how to kind of make it work.
Yeah.
And then Monday after the trip, I'll take the rig in because I just don't have time to do it. to drop the transmission, do a clutch swap, and then figure out what's going on in there. And so I was like, you know what? I have never taken Kermit to a mechanic before. This is going to be the first time Kermit's going to a mechanic since I've had him. First time I've taken a vehicle to a mechanic in 8 years, 9 years, 8 years, 7 years, somewhere around there. And I was like, I just feel like I'm giving up. I feel so defeated. But it needs to get done and I don't have time to do it. So yeah,
that's really what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Is, I mean, there's points that when you take the vehicle in, because there's more you can do while somebody else is doing that work, you know, mm-hmm. you can get more stuff done while somebody else is doing work for you.
Exactly. And it's way more cost effective. It's way more value of my time to be working on more flight stuff than trying to work on Kermit.
Makes sense.
And so I was like, all right, I'm just going to take it in Monday, go on the Rubicon trip. Hopefully everything will go well. I debated buying a clutch and taking it with me on the trip.
Oh, man.
Just in case it blew out on the trail and we had to do a clutch swap on the trail.
Wow. I can't imagine.
And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to buy a clutch. I'm just going to go and we're going to have faith that this is going to work. Damn it. I got up to almost to Fresh Pond Chevron at 10:30, 11 p.m. at night on Thursday, because we're starting at 6 a.m. Friday, right?
Right.
So my goal was to get up and sleep down in the spillway at Loon Lake. And I got up to Fresh Pond, the Chevron there, right off Highway 50. And coming up one of the hill, just up that section there where it's kind of one lane or two lanes, one going either direction, little windy. And I couldn't shift the clutch anymore. I couldn't shift the transmission anymore.
What? Really?
So I went to downshift from fifth gear to fourth gear to, you know, go up one of the hills there, and it wouldn't go into fourth gear.
Uh-oh.
It just ground the shit out of the transmission. I was like, oh, that's bad. And so, like, I'm trying to, like, get it in. I'm like, I just decided to slap it in a little bit. It wasn't going. And now I'm going slow enough where I'm like, okay, I need to go choose third gear. Wouldn't go into third gear. Wouldn't go into second gear. It wouldn't go into first gear. And I had to come to a stop on the side of the highway.
Oh, dang.
And then I shut off the engine and put it in gear and got it back up and going from first gear. And through rev matching accelerating, I was able to keep it going back up into fourth gear, right? And so I pulled into the Chevron to get A, to get gas for the weekend, and B, to kind of like look under and diagnose stuff. And when I pulled into the Chevron and I pulled into the gas station there, the sound of the clutch on the flywheel was extremely loud.
Dang.
It's to the point where there was a couple people camping out there. That's a big parking lot. Some people camp out there. Some guy, he was in his truck for whatever reason. He got out and like looked over at me, like specifically to look and see what was going on. And I was like, sorry, man. Cause it's like 11 PM at night. People are trying to sleep.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I woke him up. And I was like, sorry, man. I apologize. He goes, oh, no worries. You okay? I was like, I don't know yet. And so I got gas and was able to get it, you know, back into first gear to get out of the park, to go out of the gas station to the parking lot edge, right?
Okay.
And then it wouldn't go into gear at all. And that's when I texted you.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, hey, Jimmy, are you awake?
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, what's up, man? And I was like, yeah, I can't. If it's doing this, I can't risk going on the trail for the weekend. I'm going to be that guy that knowingly goes on the trail with a big major issue and ruins the trip for everybody.
You could have gone to the spillway and then hiked.
I could have probably just backpack in with my gazelle tent on my back
and throw it all in somebody's rig.
I'll throw it on top of Hussman's buggy.
Yeah. And then you could have walked as fast as most of those guys.
Right. So anyways, I called the trip there, trying to come out of the parking lot. I could not get out of the parking lot and it wouldn't go into any gear, whether I turned off the engine or not.
Wow.
And so I was like, I don't know what the hell's going on now. And if it's not going into any gear whatsoever, that tells me I have a transmission problem. Not going into gear with the engine off.
Yeah. I wonder, I'm not sure. I wonder if the synchros are still not aligned from popping it out of gear.
That could have been. I don't know. I couldn't get it to to go. And so I'm like sticking halfway out of the parking lot, almost in the highway. And I couldn't get the rig to move. And I was like, I'm gonna have to jump out and like push it one way or the other. And
yeah, I bet you it one of those scenarios, you know, like when mainly it comes up on automatic transmissions, but when you roll backwards, it's really hard to get out of whatever gear you're in, and you need to like kind of turn the wheel or, you know, get it to the rig to shift a little bit, and then you could slid it into gear.
Yeah. So anyways, that was where I was kind of at, and I've never done rev matching without being able to somewhat use a clutch before, right? Okay. Never done that before. I kind of understood the concept. I know that there's an RPM at which the gears kind of line up.
Right, exactly.
And you just have to be quick about your gear change. But I'd never done it before, and I didn't know where those RPMs kind of were at in the RPM range. And so I asked you, I was like, all right, so explain RPM rev matching to me real quick, Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm like, what's up? Yeah, and so RPM rev matching, it's fun when, if you're not broken down.
If you're not, yeah.
But there's a point at which the RPMs will match between, let's just say, second and third gear, right? Where second gear, you're going to probably be, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 RPM, maybe 3,000 to 4,000 RPM. And then when you put it down into third, you know, your transmission is still spinning at the same rate, but your RPMs are going to change, right? Because the RPM, the plan is to have this transmission spinning at the same speed, right? Or the, you know, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Because when you move, you know, when you shift gears, the transmission, it, you're changing to a lower ratio, but the things internally are still spinning roughly at the same speed. So you're looking at trying to match those RPMs, which are in no way are correlating to the speed of your transmission. And so, yeah, so working your way from second to the third gear, you need to get into like 4,000 RPMs and then move it to third, and then you'll probably drop down to like 1,500 RPMs.
Yeah, 1,500 to 1,000, somewhere in there.
Yeah, and then you're now you're in third gear, and then you can do that. There's a point, there's an equal spot on every, you know, gear ratio that the speed, the RPMs and the speed of your transmissions are going to be the same. And then if you're going downshifting, then you need to do the opposite.
Yep.
You
go really low.
You need to be high. 1,000 RPMs to, and then try to get into neutral, but then rev it up to, you know, 5,000 or 4,000 RPMs and then try to get it into gear.
So I was like, all right, explain this to me. And I was like, okay, that all makes sense. And that kind of gives me an idea of 3,000 to 4,000 RPMs where I need to be looking at to say, upshift.
It was really hard to say that in a text message.
I can imagine. You did a great job. I understood what the text message that came through. I was like, okay.
It was a lot easier to say it in words as well talking. I had to contemplate it to get out of bed and go in the living room and call you and try to explain it that way.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, that doesn't help me get into gear. That helps me once I get the transmission into gear, how I can get back home without a clutch.
Yeah.
But I need to get it into gear.
Yeah. That didn't
to start off.
If I was there, I would have said, try moving your vehicle.
Yeah.
Because because your tires are attached to your axle, which is attached to the drive shaft, which is attached to your transmission. And if you move it, it's going to spin. And then you might be able to pop a gear
somewhere.
So what did you do?
Essentially, I got out of the vehicle, pushed it backwards, because like right at that spot, it's like a little dip, and I was stuck in the dip.
Okay.
And so I kind of pushed it backwards as far as I could, and then jumped in it, let it roll forward, and then just cycled through the gears really quick until I hit one, and I hit third gear.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, sweet, I have it in gear now. Now it's just a matter of getting going from a dead stop in third gear, which I got that going, and I just kind of got out of the parking lot. You know, it's 11:30 at night, so
yeah, so you there's can go no 15 traffic on the freeway.
Yeah, I don't have to worry about getting up to speed anytime quickly. Got out of the parking lot and got going in third gear, and then used rev matching with no clutch to get into fourth gear, and then rode all the way home in fourth gear.
Wow.
So even getting off the freeway, I was able to, I'm just going to try and get off the freeway without having to downshift at all and not worry about it. And I was able to get through the lights. The lights changed at the right amount of time where I was able to stay in fourth gear at like 10 miles an hour, 5 miles an hour around that, around the turns. I was like, man,
that's impressive.
I was very impressed being able to get home in fourth gear.
So not that people know where you live, but I do. So when you drove to your house through the housing track, did you take the first right with the big sweeping long turn compared to the roundabouts?
Yep. Okay. Yeah.
I was curious there.
Yep. So that was interesting getting home. But that meant then that I wasn't going to be on the Rubicon trip.
Correct.
And I'm supposed to be leading the trip.
Yes, you were.
Big time. Yeah, I was, and I was supposed to be leading the trip. So now I've got to get in touch with people to let them know that I'm not going to be there and that somebody else needs to take over the trip spur of the moment in the morning. So I was like, well, everybody else I know of is up there. Because everybody pretty much went up Thursday night. The only person I know up going up Friday morning was Hussman.
Oh.
So I texted Hussman and said, hey, just FYI, here's the situation. My clutch is not acting like a clutch anymore. So I'm not going on the trip. Tell John and Renee and Brian that they get to take over the trip now. Sorry. And that's what he did. I got a text from him in the morning that said, hey, that sucks. You know, we'll make it happen kind of thing. And they made it happen. They had a great trip. The format that we had kind of decided on doing, which was breaking the big group into small groups, worked really well.
Oh, good.
For the most part, there was essentially not quite enough people still that really knew the trail, apparently. Like, there was more people. I thought that there should have been, that there was more people in attendance that knew the trail, but those people apparently did not know the trail very well, as well as I thought they did.
Got it.
And so there was the first two people out, which was Jason Squared. Jason and Jason in the buggies.
Yeah.
They got out, they left at 6:30 from the spillway and they made it to Rubicon Springs by noon 30.
Wow.
So 6 hours.
6 hours.
In buggies. And so I don't know. I know that they stopped at Cell Phone Tree because I got a call. I got texts from Hussman and a call from Green. And so I don't know how much else they stopped and played around between on that trip, but 6 hours for their two buggies to make it from the spillway to the springs.
Dang.
At that point, when I was talking with Jason in the springs over the ham radio, I was in here, so I was using Echolink. And so I talked with him. At that point, our middle group was in the middle of Big Sluice.
So by the time Jason Green got to Rubicon Springs campground where they were camping, the middle group was in Big Sluice.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
So that, and that group is the group that has been on the trail before. They've got belt rigs. They just don't know the ins and outs of the trail, right?
Okay.
And so I'm just giving these details because we kind of talked about how long would it take you to get to different points on the trail, run the trail on the last Monday's episode.
Yeah.
And so that group was in the middle of Big Sluice in 6 hours,
and so,
which is halfway between Buck and the springs.
Right. And so I was going to say probably another hour till they got to the springs.
I'd guess about that. So the last group, which was all the newbies, they all had capable rigs just fine, but they were not familiar with the trail really at all. There was about 14 of them. They had split into two groups, and then the two groups caught each other, and they ended up just being in one big group of about 14 rigs the whole way.
You okay?
They were coming into Buck Island at that point in time in 6 hours.
Mm.
So there you go. I think that's a pretty good kind of gauge indicator of...
So how much longer did it take the new group to get to the springs? Do you know?
They pulled into the springs right after 4 o'clock. The last person was in the springs after four. So 10 hours?
10 hours.
Yeah. So you can kind of expect that, gauge that if you're new to the trail and you're not going with somebody who knows the trail and knows the lines and knows where to go. Expect it to take roughly 10 hours to go from the spillway to the springs.
Right. Mm. And then if you're in a buggy,
hours. 6 hours.
Yeah, because even I know the trail well enough, I don't think I could have kept up with Jason or Jason and Jason.
I don't think so. Usually going into Buck Island, for some reason, it takes me about 5 to 6 hours. And so the, but like coming from Buck Island back to Loon, it takes me like 3 hours. I'm like, I have no clue how that makes any sense.
The rocks are angled differently.
Maybe. I don't know. So anyways, they had a great trip. The weather was hot down here Friday. We hit 106 down here in the Sacramento Valley. So they were probably sitting high 80s up on the trail. But they said it was absolutely gorgeous. Everybody who could be topless and no doors was topless and no doors on their rigs. They had a great trip. This was the first time we got to use the VIP spot at the Rubicon Springs.
Oh, cool.
And so it's typically reserved for, you know, VIP stuff, like Jeepers Jamboree, JJ, any big groups that are coming in. Usually that's where all kind of like the volunteers go and get to camp at. And so we got to use it because the Springs accidentally gave away one of our reservations. So they're like, we'll give you guys the VIP spot. And people loved it.
I'm sure.
Yeah. There was some people that were like, I don't like camping in dirt. That's why we camp on the slabs. And I'm like, cool. That's why we had the slabs reserved as well. So if people wanted to sleep on the slabs right next to the waterfall, you could do that. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to be in the VIP area, you could do that. And it worked out phenomenally.
Oh, good.
So I think we'll be doing that again next year.
If you can get the VIP.
If we can get the VIP. Apparently they told us that if we want it, we can have it. We just need to put our reservations in ASAP.
Oh, cool.
So, Saturday for them was great. Apparently a beautiful day. Most people just hung out. They said nobody, as far as they know, nobody went down to check out the stone cabins. Nobody really went for hikes. Everyone's kind of hung out in camp and went swimming for the day. And then Sunday it stormed. It dumped on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I spoke to Hussman and he said that I think it was Jason, and James and Rhonda drove through the trail.
Okay.
And they camped. I'm going to get the place wrong, but it's more or less, I think it was Walker Hill. They camped at Walker Hill.
Oh, so they stayed one more night?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then they had planned to try to wake up and beat the rain.
Oh, they went back on Saturday?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
And so they tried to beat the rain and they said as soon as they packed up and started driving, it started raining.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much a story I heard from the group that went up Cadillac on Sunday. They tried to wake up early and get out of the Springs by like 6:30 a.m. to make it up Cadillac before the rain started dumping, and they didn't make it.
Yeah.
But it just goes like, I think running without a top and without doors is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I always end up regretting it anytime I do. And this would have been another trip. Like, there was people having to drive all the way back down from Tahoe on the highway with no top and no doors in a rainstorm.
Right.
Like a torrential downpour. And I was like, that just sounds miserable, absolutely miserable to me.
John Allen went on the trip, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, then you know it's going to rain.
Exactly, right? That's the ongoing joke is, well, yeah, it's always going to rain. So when
John's on that trail, it's going to rain.
Yep. Yeah, there's an ongoing joke with the Mad Hatters where if we want to solve the drought problem in California, we just need to pay John to go off-roading every week.
That'll probably do it.
Yeah. So anyways, torrential downpour from 106 degrees on Friday down in Sacramento to a torrential downpour in Tahoe on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm just like, that's just crazy to me, the weather that we're getting. It can't make up its mind. And we're going to get another like thing like that this week.
Are we?
Yeah, we're getting another 100, 102 degree day.
Oh, yeah.
And 2 days later, it's going to be 75.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I'm like, it's comical to me. But anyways, they had a great trip. There was no big issues. The only issues they had was two people popped beads off their tires.
Oh, that's not bad.
So they just had to reseat the beads and off they went and they had a good time. So, good. Sounds like it had a good time. I had severe FOMO the entire weekend. And I had a lot of other issues going on that just really stressed me out the entire whole last week and weekend. I kept all the sharp objects away from me for the weekend. And
good idea.
I made some use of my newfound spare time. So
nice.
Yeah.
And so it sounds, so did you take Kermit into the shop earlier?
Oh yeah. Good question. So Friday morning, cause I got back home at like 1 a.m. Thursday night, right? Thursday night, Friday night, Friday morning. And so Friday morning, I was like, I can still, if my problem is the master slave cylinder, I can swap it out first thing Friday morning and still, you know, get up to the trail, go up through Tahoe, come down into Cadillac and meet everybody in the Springs on Friday.
Okay.
But I'm still making this fucking work.
Yeah.
So I swapped out the master and slave cylinder, bled it all, took me about an hour and a half to do, and it didn't fix the problem.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, well, I get to just unpack Kermit and wallow in my pity. And the big issue why I got such a late start Thursday night is because our laser went down at Morflate. And so after I was going to be leaving, 5, 6 p.m. Thursday, I stayed another 3 hours until like 8 or 9 p.m. to try and diagnose and fix the laser. And it wasn't happy. So I'm, trying to leave town, get out to a wheeling trip with a broken rig, essentially, while trying to figure out what's going on with this laser and fix that so that more flight production can continue. And to top it off, my tenant's fridge went out the day before on Wednesday. So I'm now trying to figure out how to get my tenant's refrigerator fixed. And I'm like, this just nothing is lining up right now.
Right.
And I still had, orders missing for Morph. I still got $40,000 in purchase orders missing right now, MIA.
My gosh.
And so just Friday, Thursday and Friday, I was just way out of it.
Got it.
So after I called the trip, I was like, master and slave cylinder, whatever. Monday came around. I took Kermit into the mechanic.
Did you drive it?
I drove it over there. It started working well enough where I was able to rev match using the clutch. So I was back to pre-trip condition, right?
Sure.
Took it into them. They said, hey, we got to do diagnostics on it and, just go through the steps to make sure that we really need to drop the transmission and get into the clutch. And I was like, okay, whatever. So I paid $250 for them to tell me that I did the master and slave cylinder correct and everything was bled correctly and they need to drop the transmission and get into the bell housing.
But are they applying that $200 to the project?
No.
No.
Yeah. The labor, well, I mean, it's all going into a project tab essentially, right?
Okay.
So, but they're not putting that $250 towards the labor of dropping the transmission.
Well, sure, I guess. Yeah. But usually to some extent, there's like a diagnosis fee that you have to pay regardless.
No, they didn't have a diagnosis fee to pay regardless, but I'm guessing that's what that was. Yeah,
that's what it is.
So
bummer.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway, so they, after getting to the point where they've checked everything else other than dropping the drivetrain out, they said there's definitely something going on inside the bell housing that they need to check in and drop everything and look in there. And I was like, yeah, I agree. But they said they also think something's going on with the transmission. They think that they can hear some sort of noise rattling coming from the transmission, which I always thought was just the twin stick rattling and making noise because Bobcat kind of does the same thing. It's just not as loud in Bobcat. Whereas like in Kermit, it is fucking loud. And so they think that that's a transmission issue.
Interesting.
Yeah. So they're dropping it as we speak right now, to get in there and take a look at everything.
Was that Bobcat's transmission?
No, that's the transmission I got from Ori when we did the 3-4 swap.
Oh, yeah.
Which has always made that noise. And I thought it was a T-case issue. But when I swapped the T-cases out, it still made that noise. And I've rebuilt both those T-cases and everything's golden and good to go. And it still makes the noise. So it has to be the transmission.
Hmm.
So anyways, he's looking into that. I told him I need the rig back by Thursday, if at all possible. Okay. Because we have the Highlanders poker run coming up this weekend, which Morflate is sponsoring.
Okay.
Nice. So I'm like, what are the thoughts? Do you think if we need to put a new clutch in it that we can get it done by Thursday? He said, yeah, no problem. Should be no issue.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
But
if I have a transmission
issue. If you have a transmission issue, now you have problems.
So the way he described it, he said, do you do transmission stuff in shop or do you just going to swap out the new to put in a used transmission, another R150? And he goes, no, we have a transmission guy that's really good that we just take stuff to and he rebuilds them here near us. And I was like, okay. And he goes, yeah, so we're still on track to make sure you get your rig back Thursday afternoon. And I was like, damn, he can rebuild a transmission that short of notice and have it all back put together by Thursday afternoon? If you can, kudos. I will give you major props.
Yeah.
I just don't think it can be done.
Let's we'll give them props. We'll give them a name, right? Shout out if they can get it done.
Absolutely. So this guy, he came recommended by Dimitri.
Oh.
So cool. He's right next to Dimitri's Stellarbuilt shop. And so, yeah, as soon as I said, hey, you guys came recommended by Dimitri, the guy was like, oh, awesome, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, and, I know that you guys, your thing is to break your rig and then you put it all back together every time. You know how to do all this. And I was like, well, for the most part.
Yeah.
But it was, he, once I told him, you know, hey, I'm coming in from Dimitri, he totally completely changed his attitude. And I was interesting. Why didn't you just give me this fun guy to begin with? But, anyway, so we'll see how that turns out. We'll give him a huge shout out on the podcast, for everybody in the Sacramento area. If he gets it done by Thursday, like he says he can.
Nice.
did that. Friday was just diagnosing the laser and trying to figure out production, trying to figure out where all of our orders are. The biggest one is the compressor order for Morphlate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I figured out why we couldn't find it. Nobody could find the shipment.
Oh, why?
Because it was supposed to go to the LA ports.
Okay.
And so we had the name of the ship, the container number, everything. But nobody could find that ship or container in the LA ports. And it arrived at the ports, quote unquote, on May 23rd. And as of like June, what was last week? June 7th or June 8th. Nobody could find the ship. No one could find the shipment. Nobody could find our container. Nothing.
Wow.
I was like, how do you lose a fucking cargo ship?
Right.
A cargo ship. They could, those carry what, 2,000 containers?
Yeah.
I don't know whatever it is.
They're big.
They lost a fucking cargo ship in a 2-week period. Nobody can find it. I'm like, I don't understand it. What the fuck is going on, people?
Somebody could get in contact with a cargo ship.
Probably.
Yeah.
But none of my contacts were able to find this ship. Right. I'm like, what the hell is going on? So I'm freaking out. I've got $35,000 there, right? That's just MIA. I'm like, am I going to have to make an insurance claim on this? Or are we going to find this goddamn ship? So anyways, it surfaced in Oakland.
Was it a submarine?
I know, right? No, they found it in Oakland.
Okay.
So apparently.
That's not LA, but that's closer.
Apparently what had happened was our container was supposed to get offloaded in LA. And what happens in order for ships to go to Oakland, they go through LA first and they offload their LA cargo. And then they go up to Oakland and offload their Oakland cargo.
Hmm. Okay.
Apparently our container got mixed up and it didn't get offloaded in LA. So the ship arrived in LA on May 23rd. Offloaded its cargo there, which ours was supposed to be a part of, and then continued up to Oakland. When it pulled into Oakland, Oakland had a closed section of the port due to either COVID or labor shortages. They wouldn't tell us. They said just due to current times, logistics issues.
Sure.
And so because the ship showed up in a closed section of the port, nobody could go and check and see if our container was on that ship or not.
Lovely.
And so we sat there for another week trying to figure out if our, just having to wait for the port to reopen before we could find out if our shipment was on the ship in Oakland. So once the port reopened, we got confirmation on Friday evening that's where our shipment was in Oakland.
Well, you know, it's going to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be accepted in LA. So they're going to offload it. I would get so
fucking pissed if they said that.
Ship it to LA. It's going to get accepted mm-hmm. and then it'll be shipped up here. And when it gets shipped up here, it's going to get rerouted to Chicago.
That, I wouldn't surprise me if it did. No, they got it offloaded in Oakland and UPS got the shipment and everything. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to tell all my customers until I have confirmation from you guys that you have my shipment in hand, because last time you told me where my shipment was and it wasn't. So until you have it in your hand, I'm not saying shit right now. And so they got it in hand and I got a text yesterday at 6 p.m. Saying, hey, we are due and set to deliver your shipment tomorrow. And I was like, oh, yay. I'm so happy I could cry.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. But I'm literally going to like cry right now just because of how stressful this whole process was. So anyways, we're waiting right now for the shipment to arrive. Once it is here, then I will send out all the orders for the wait list on the compressors, the 10-6 compressors. So
cool.
What's really cool, I've been keeping this kind of hush hush, is we're launching another compressor
Ooh.
With this shipment. So not only are we getting a big batch of the 10.6s in, about 300 units, we're also launching 200 units of another compressor.
Nice. That's exciting.
Yeah, and it's going to be essentially the same compressor you see out there that everybody else has.
Okay.
It's the Smitty built single cylinder compressor. No pressure cutoff switch. It'll have our changes on it with the longer hose for better heat dissipation. We're going to put a universal coupler on it, so it's standard for United States fittings. It's going to be designed with our color theme and everything on it. It's going to be called the 5.6 because it outputs 5.6 CFM. But we're going to be selling it as a price point option for people.
Nice. So they just don't want to spend the extra money to get a 10.6.
Either they don't want to spend the extra money for the 10.6, or for some reason they don't want to get a multi-tire setup for your hoses. Sure. The hose. No,
that
kits,
makes
right?
more sense. So somebody that, like, maybe you have 31s and you have the Duo, mm-hmm. and you don't need a 10.6, mm-hmm. because you can only really run the 10.6 on a quad, right? Or you
Correct.
Should.
Yeah. You if you're not running four tires at a time, do not buy a 10.6 compressor, please. Yes. You will burn it up.
So that's a good point. So if you're not running a four tire system, mm-hmm. then you really didn't have a compressor for them.
Correct. Exactly. So now we will have an option for people who don't want to run a multi-tire system.
Nice. Good work.
Yeah. And so Smart. It's going to be at a $160 price point, $159.99.
Awesome. That's a great point.
Yeah. Every other compressor like that on the market is anywhere from 170 to 210, $210, right around there. So we're going to have this option for people that'll beat out every other price point on the market right now.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's great. Good to hear it.
So we're launching that, and that should hopefully be showing up today with the everything. So again, I'll believe it when I see it arrive here, but it's much better news than it was on Friday morning.
When you couldn't find
it. When I couldn't find it. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So anyways, we had that. The laser went down, and that's a whole nother. I've learned a lot about lasers in the past 3 days. So I'm not going to bore everybody with nerdy laser details.
We should have Cruising to Camp Lee in here, and we'll just do an episode on lasers.
That could actually be interesting. Do a full episode on lasers. That way, if people don't want to listen to it, they can skip the episode. But if people do want to listen to it and you want to learn how lasers work, I think it could be a really fun episode.
It'd be interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
We could have Jimbo in, too. That'd be fun. Could talk about big lasers.
Big lasers. And we can pull in a Garrett from Rough Stuff.
True.
Yeah. With their
Garrett's
new laser.
Garrett's probably as good as Jimbo. Jimbo's big one can cut through at like a half inch.
Nice.
It's nuts.
So I went down a rabbit hole of looking at lasers to buy. And I
big
found
lasers?
Like big lasers.
Well,
I found a 700 watt laser for like,
that's not big.
It can cut through half inch plate.
Oh really?
Yeah. I believe, right around there, 3/8.
I think Jimbo's like 6,000.
Oh jeez.
It's in his has a K behind it. Oh, I know that maybe it's a 3K or something, but yeah.
Yeah. But I was looking, I was like, 700 watt laser would be kind of fun. I could mm-hmm. cut my own brackets for stuff.
I think you should do it.
Anyways. So I went down a big, deep, long rabbit hole, similar to my stovetop rabbit hole that Wheeling Wine and Whiskey loved so much.
Yeah,
so,
I still don't get it.
You still don't get it?
No, I do, but I'm just saying.
Whatever. We're not going to go back into that one. So lasers, I don't know, things are just...
Refrigerators and compressors.
Lasers, refrigerators, compressors, bags. So we're also out of bags right now at Morflate.
Oh, bummer.
And we had a shipment air freighted. So we had like 2,000 bags made, and just demand keeps going up faster than I'm calculating growth for. And so we ran out of bags a month and a half before I had anticipated, according to production schedule, right?
Wow. Okay.
And so I air freighted a part of the order. And the air freight shipment ended up being in a container that was seized by customs because of other stuff in the container.
Oh,
and
that sucks.
Nobody knows where the container is. Customs isn't communicating with anybody. And I paid air freight shipping is fucking expensive. It's 10 times more expensive than sea freight.
Wow.
And so Long story short, our sea freight shipment of the bags is going to be arriving before the air freight shipment.
Oh my gosh. And you're not going to get money back for that.
No, I'm not getting money back. It's not
the shipping people's fault. It's customs.
It's customs. It's the U.S. customs. And
customs is like, well, we had to cease this.
Yeah, it's not our problem. Your product was in a container with something that we needed to look at.
That's lame.
Yep. So, I don't know. Global shipping logistics is weird. I'm a masochist because I love problem solving. And I love, like, one of the things that really keeps me going.
Masochist mean you like pain?
Yes, that is what masochism means.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure.
So yeah, I like the pain of dealing with global shipping logistics because it's a unique problem that has no real solutions. You kind of have to make up everything as you go and adapt to everything and figure out what's the best way to do this, and it's not always the same answer. So
yeah, that's
frustrating, but
doesn't sound fun.
It's frustrating, but I find it fun at the same time. It's really weird.
I guess we do have a quick little update to report.
We do?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Literally, as we're talking, the compressors are being unloaded.
It is true. Yep.
If you're on the wait list, you should be getting an email sometime soon.
You will see an email.
Hopefully, probably before this shows up.
Yes, exactly.
On the podcasting ether webs.
Yep. So compressors did land while we're in the middle of talking here. So we took a short break, which you guys won't notice because that's the beauty of podcasting.
Yeah. Also, while we were taking our break, I found out that Snail Trail 4x4 has been spoofed.
Yep.
Somebody has made a copy of Snail Trail 4x4 Instagram. Mm-hmm. It is Snail Trail 4x4_ is the fake account. And they are sending people links to enter into the Gear Wrench Tool giveaway, which you don't need to click on to be entered.
No, you don't.
All you need to do is use the hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
So don't follow fake accounts. Go report it.
Yep.
And don't click on links that you don't trust.
That's a good rule of life,
right?
Never click on links that you don't know what they are.
Yes. And thank you to everybody that has sent in messages to me. Even though I have received probably a dozen or so, please, you know, I think that it's a positive thing if you see something that looks fishy to, you know, let the person know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't assume that somebody else has probably already sent this to them.
Yeah.
Just take it upon yourself and let them know.
Yep. Cool. So, there's a couple of updates that
immediately.
Oh my God. All right. So I don't even remember where we were at here. Done with shipping logistic up, more flight updates and all that fun stories. Done with talking about the Rubicon trip. I got the solar panel mounted.
Oh, cool.
On the trailer.
Okay.
So I got a 375 watt solar panel from Dave McKinney, Mr. Rubicon Trail Adventures, and he got it from a buddy of his. So I'm fabbed up some brackets for the top of the trailer.
Nice.
And got the solar panel all mounted. So now I just need a second battery and an inverter and a solar charger. And then I can set up all the wiring for everything.
Very
and
nice.
Then it should be good to go. And then I just need to figure out the whole stove to the situation still.
We'll do a whole nother episode on
that. Do a whole nother episode on it for everybody. I did that on Saturday. And then Sunday, I needed to let some steam off because I needed to.
So did you go four-wheeling in the furred?
No, I went...
Yeah, it's dirty, I assume.
That was from the trip out to Rattlesnake Road with Randy last weekend. I don't clean my vehicles, so it's still all dirty.
For 15,000.
The 15,000. No, I went shooting on Sunday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I'm looking at, I want to look into getting a CCW.
Yeah.
And not necessarily just because I want to carry a gun everywhere. It's because I want to have the skill sets that you have to prove that you have in order to get a CCW, right?
Got it.
Okay. So if I'm going to try and train myself for those skill sets, I might as well just go through the CCW.
Yeah.
Of course, right?
Yeah. Makes sense.
I'm also looking...
You might as well get something out of your training.
Exactly, right? And so, but also if I'm going to have a CCW, I might as well look into pistols that I can carry, because the XD 9mm 4-inch barrel is a great pistol. I like it a lot. But it's just a little bit big to be carrying around, right?
Yeah, I guess if you're not used to something that's 4 inches, yeah.
That story of my life right there, right? So
that's why I got a silenced rifle underneath it. There you go.
Nice. So I went over to try out some more firearms. Mm-hmm. And I got to shoot the Smith & Wesson Shield, the M&P Shield. Okay. 3-inch, which was a really nice gun. I really liked that one. That was cool. I shot another one, which I wasn't a big fan of. I don't even remember what it was, but I was like, eh, I don't like it. And then I got to shoot a 1911 EMP, which is a really nice, gun, solid metal design, steel design, for a 3-inch barrel, 9mm 1911 design. Mm-hmm. Beautiful gun. It shoots really, really nicely. And then I also tried a Sig Sauer P238, which is a 380 auto version of Sig Sauer's 1911, essentially. So it's essentially Sig Sauer's version of the 1911 EMP.
Oh, cool.
But it's a 380 auto. And so I shot that, and that shot even nicer than the 1911.
Oh, okay.
It was very, very impressive. And what was really even more interesting, for a tiny little gun like that, the slide on it and the action on it is so smooth.
Oh, there's not much recoil or anything for being a small.
Not much recoil for awesome. Being a small 3-inch gun, and to rack the slide and like check to see if it's loaded, see if there's one in the chamber, all that stuff. The slide operates extremely smoothly.
Wow, cool.
Good to know. So I was like, that's a neat little gun, very user friendly. And so I liked that one the most out of the four we tried, but I took the secretary with me as well.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And so she really, really liked the 1911 EMP.
Oh.
And so afterwards, I went up to the counter and I was like, hey, what's the likelihood of getting these? But I would like to get the 238 available in a 9mm option rather than a 380? And he goes, yeah, it's called the 938. I was like, okay, cool. And he goes, unfortunately, it's on roster here in California. And I was like,
what's that mean?
So on roster means that there's certain guns that you cannot buy brand new as a civilian.
Oh.
You have to be a law enforcement officer, military member, essentially some kind of government member licensed to carry a weapon. Hmm. And so that's the only way you can purchase an on roster weapon in California.
It seems weird for a pistol.
Yeah, right? I was like, but I can get the 380 version of the 9mm is not that much different from a 380. And so I was like, all right, whatever. But apparently what happens is you can buy on roster firearms in the used market.
Okay.
You just can't buy them brand new from the manufacturer. And
That's silly.
I'm like, that just doesn't make any sense to me, but okay, whatever.
So you could go to a gun shop, and if they have a used
938.
Mm-hmm. You could buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I just can't buy it new.
Silly.
So I'm like, all right. So now I'm going to be probably hunting around the used market here to see if I can find a 938 Sig Sauer. And then train with that to get my CCW would be my preference, right?
So who can purchase a new version?
Law enforcement officers or military members.
Yeah. Okay. So if we have any California law enforcement officers or military members that might want to.
Yeah. So here's the loophole. Here's what everybody does, right? Everybody just has their law enforcement buddies or military buddies buy the gun for them. And I'm like, I don't necessarily agree with that mentality. Like, and I get it. In order to transfer the gun, you have to go through a gun transfer, right? That it's all that way. The gun, the ownership of the gun does transfer. Everything's legit. And I'm like, and apparently it's done so often that that's like the legit thing to do. That's how you get on roster weapons, and nobody bats an eye about it.
Right.
And I'm like,
well, because why
not just open up the stupid roster?
Yeah, then? Sounds stupid enough.
Like that's, I don't know. It's like the whole on roster thing makes no sense to me. If it's like totally just okay for
people to buy an on-roster weapon and then just sell it on the used market right away. Like, there's no time frame you have to hold on to that weapon to prove that you're going to use it for your law enforcement uses or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. There's no rule that says that.
Yeah. Not as far as I know, and I haven't been able to find one. So I'm like, I don't know. The whole on-roster thing, I don't understand it. So if anybody has an explanation as to why things are on-roster and the way that works, right in. I'm curious to know. I'm new to the whole gun thing. So
maybe,
like,
it's a supply and demand.
Maybe, I don't know.
So they only want military or law enforcement to have it
so that it's always available for them, maybe, when they need it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. So the other, speaking of supply and demand, the secretary really, really liked the 1911 EMP, and she shot really well with it. I was very impressed, because all the other guns, even the XD, she can get groupings to within about 7-8 inches at about 20 feet out, 15 to 20 feet out, right? With the 1911 EMP, she was shooting within 4-inch groupings at 20 feet out.
Wow.
So a shorter barrel, different gun. And
impressive.
And she was actually doing really well with it. So I was like, okay, let's look at getting her something that she can play around with, right? And be excited to go out and play with and shoot and everything. And so, I don't want to say play with, that's the wrong terminology, but I asked him, I was like, it's okay, what about the 1911 EMP? Is that on roster? He goes, no, it's not on roster, but it's an 18-month wait period right now to get one for manufacturer.
Jeez.
I was like, Jesus Christ.
I've been looking at a camera, not to derail the conversation, but I've been looking at a Sony camera that is available, but just nobody has it. Nobody can tell me when it's coming in.
Yep. Well, apparently refrigerators, you can only get stainless steel appliances right now.
Yeah, like, that's what my parents just said. I mean, you're having a problem with the refrigerators, but we're remodeling that, or my parents are remodeling my house, and they went and bought all new appliances, and they wanted some white ones, and pretty much either one, they're not available, or they don't make it anymore. Only stainless steel is available.
Also, speaking of supply and demand shortages, tampons are in a massive shortage right now.
Really?
Yep.
And baby formula?
Baby formula is going to get better. That's a whole nother issue. That's because the government created a monopoly, a quasi-monopoly, on baby formula producers. Like, that baby shortage issue is unique to the United States. Nobody else in the world is having baby formula.
Because that one factory went down, we had a problem.
Yep. And the government created a monopoly out of it, pretty much. And so the one factory goes out and the whole nation can't get baby formula anymore. Anyways, tampons are in a massive shortage right now.
Interesting.
So, fellas, if you want some bonus points with your ladies, if you see some tampons somewhere, pick them up and bring them home for your ladies.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's more fun supply and demand stuff. Nice. But yeah, anyways, had a lot of fun shooting on Sunday. We probably shot 300 rounds.
Wow.
Yeah, we were there for a little bit, trying the different stuff, and we put more rounds through the XD, just to help kind of get it broken in. So,
nice.
But yeah, so far I really, really, really like the XD. That's still my favorite gun out of everything I've tried so far, and I've gotten to go out and shoot 30 or so weapons now, 30 or so firearms, and I still really like that XD9. So,
yeah. I thought an Uzi was fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine it would be fun, but not very practical.
No. I never said it was practical.
That's true.
It was fun, though.
It was fun.
Yeah. One in Nevada.
Yeah. Or Mexico.
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty much my weekend. And now it's just a matter of I got to get all the orders straightened away for compressors, and then see if I can get Kermit back up and running for this weekend, because pretty much from here on out, every single weekend of mine is booked until like September.
Damn.
So I kind of need Kermit up and running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just another reason to take it to somebody that has experience in doing that operation.
Yeah. So, how did you get along this weekend?
Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Here we are on the recording. It says 2 hours now.
Yeah, we took an hour break though.
No, not quite. But my weekend was fine. We went camping with the assistant's family. Mm-hmm. We went up to Lake Shasta, and it was a low key weekend for the most part. The lake was pretty low, but we camped at a spot where it wasn't terribly far to get down to the lowest dock available. And we did some boating, what do you call it? Why did I just completely blank on the term? We did tubing and wakeboarding. There's the word I was looking for. Uh-huh. I'm not much of a, I'm 40 years old and don't like getting thrown around on a tube too much anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, the best, you know, tubing's fun. And, you know, it's fun for the driver to try and throw somebody off the tube. Mm-hmm. And you never really go off a tube in a graceful manner.
No.
So I've kind of given up on tubing because I don't want to be sore and broken for a few days after doing that.
Yeah.
Where I kind of have some control of how I fall on a wakeboard.
Yeah.
To some extent. Anyways, we did that. It was a low key weekend, just a lot of, family time relaxing. We got rained on pretty much about 11 o'clock on Saturday night, and it rained until about 9 a.m. Sunday morning on us.
Yeah.
And then it cleared up, and we knew it was going to be an odd, like, spotty, showery day. So we had planned, we went to the Shasta Caverns during the day. And we went hiking.
Never heard of those.
Yeah, I haven't either. It was my first time going to them. Apparently, people have told the assistant to go to them before, but just never have. We'd rather go out on a boat, you know. But since it was going to be rainy and we didn't really want to be out on a boat, we decided to hike through the caverns. And that was a lot of fun. We were like the second to last tour to go because it got so windy that the ferry, like our little boat that took you from one side of the lake to the other side of the lake, was having a tough time, and the passengers were getting wet. But they were good. I guess that back in the day, before Shasta Lake was even around, these people knew of the caverns and literally jackhammered and dynamited and connected the caves together and made this like maze of caves underneath the mountains. And you know, where it was like, oh, you could hike in this one entrance and go to this room, you know, or you hike in that entrance down there and go to another room. And so they literally like made paths between all the rooms through the mountain. So
nice.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, is it like spelunking style, or are you like walking
paths? You were walking on paths and stairs and rails, and they had the whole thing lit up and different lights in different areas and lights behind specific like points of interest, like, you know,
features.
Exactly. And, you know, and then the tour guide that you were with, you know, was talking about different formations and how the rocks do what they do, you know, creating stalactites and stalagmites and, you know, and everything from there on. But it was fun. Nice. It was about an hour long tour. So, but it would, you know, took a half an hour or so to get there, and you know, and then that we went, you hike up the entire time through the cave, and then you end up at the, near the top of the mountain or so, and then you hike on the outside, you hike down to the back to the bus.
Oh, I see.
Bus down to the water, you take the water ferry cross back over to another bus up to the visitor center, and then our car back to the camp. But by that time everything was pretty dried out, so then we packed up and drove home on Sunday night. So
nice.
But yeah, it was a good time. It was like, it was low key, nothing too exciting, just a lot of relaxing times down by the water, boating, chill. Yeah,
nice. So,
and then on Monday I started assembly of the tea cases.
Okay, how's that going?
Because I'm supposed to go wheeling on Thursday. And so it went fine. I bought all new bearings, and so it was sort of a pain. It took me a lot longer than I had anticipated to change out the bearings.
Yeah, I still haven't found a good way to change out the bearings on transfer case gears.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what the best tool to use to get something between the bearing and the gear.
That's the hard. So thin.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was at one of the ones I had to do, I couldn't get anything in there. And so I had to just cut the bearing off with a grinder.
Oh,
yeah. I used a grinder and a Dremel to cut the bearing off.
Yeah, there's a name for this, and I don't know what it is, but it looks like it's a puller of some sort.
Okay.
And it has has two bolts on each side, and so that the polar can open up and shrink, mm-hmm. but then on the inside where they would come together is an angle down mm-hmm. to a very thin piece of metal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought one of those from Harbor Freight.
Okay.
And that's pretty much the tool that solved all my problems.
Oh, interesting. Because I went and rented one from AutoZone and it didn't work. Oh. It wasn't
down. You needed down. A 20-ton press.
No, it wasn't. I couldn't get it between the bearing and the gear.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting. I had one that was super tight.
Uh-huh.
And I sort of... I inched it down and then I collapsed the spacer together and then I inched it down and collapsed the spacer together and did that a few times until the, the polar was comfortably tight enough.
I think it's called a bearing separator.
I wanted to call it like a clamshell thing.
Maybe
a bearing separator. Mm-hmm. It was in the polar's department in the auto section of Harbor Freight.
Okay.
But
maybe I need to go try that one. I feel like it could have.
It was small, because Hustle Nuts came over later in the day and I said, look, this thing was great. It solved my problems. And he's like, oh, did you get the kit? Because I think there's a larger version of it also. Mm-hmm. And so I think the smaller one saved me because it probably got a little thinner or wasn't so as large of an angle.
Yeah.
It was more shallow. So
I debated on taking the one that I rented and grinding it down into like almost a razor blade to get in there.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't think they'd be too happy when I returned it. So no,
probably not.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was one of the, like the front output shaft is super close to the gear and the bearing one of the output shafts. Maybe it's the rear output shaft. One of them's super close to the bearing is really close to the gear.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the hardest one. There was a few needle bearings that were stuck inside of places that you couldn't literally press out. And so I had to cut those. And that wasn't that bad. I just took a chisel and broke the cage out and then all the needle bearings just fell out. And then I cut a bunch of the metal away and then broke it in half and pulled it out.
Yeah.
So that all worked fine. So got all that together, got the T case together, but the crawl box is not together yet.
Gotcha.
So I picked up, with the help of Mike, First Gen Mike, he found another T case available on the market. And so, he bought it and then I bought it from him.
Wait, another one?
Yeah.
So hold on. So didn't you just go pick up like another dual case setup?
There was one available up in Chico.
Yeah, that's the one.
I didn't pick that up.
Okay.
I said there was one available. I didn't get it, though.
I thought you were heading up that day or the next day to go grab it.
I was debating it.
Okay.
But I didn't do it. So I picked up another one because I wanted to reuse the housing or get a new housing. But I also wanted to see how deep this crack went. So I actually pulled out a sanding disc and I ground down the housing and it was like, as soon as I started grinding it away, that crack went away.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Nice.
So now I have a T case.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use the old housing that I was using previously and I'll put together the gear reduction box and slap that together. And then in theory, I mean, it's just put it up in place and connect the drive shafts and Bobcat's ready to go. So
nice. So it's, I mean, you still have a little bit, but like reassembly is not that bad. In my opinion, the disassembly of everything was what took the longest.
Yeah.
Just because of pulling the freaking bearings off the gears. That was what it was.
That took a long time.
Yeah.
The pulling, and I'm doing all of them.
Yeah.
Every bearing that's in there, I'm replacing. And so like even the bearings in the adapter plate, the bearings in the gear reduction box and all the bearings in the T case. And I got all new gaskets and the whole shebang and all the new, there's like two O-rings that are in there that you replace and
You can sell it for $2,300 when you're done.
I know. It's the 23 spline too.
Oh, that's $2,500.
Right.
Oh man.
So yeah. So in theory, hopefully I can button this all together before Thursday. I should be able to.
You should be able to. I think that's very doable. So yeah.
So it's just a matter of if it goes together smoothly.
Yeah. So are you planning on are you planning on driving to the trail or trailing?
I'm planning on driving to the trail.
Okay.
Especially if we're going to do a through trip.
That was going to be my question. Are you planning on going like all the way up and out Tahoe, or if everybody goes through, you're going to get to the observation, then turn around and go back to Loon?
I probably wouldn't. Their goal is to do one day to Rubicon Springs and have a day at Rubicon Springs.
Nice.
I don't know yet. I'm not sure what my game plan is. I might go to Rubicon. I might wheel with them to Rubicon Springs. Well, I'll definitely wheel with them to Rubicon Springs, but then either the next day I might wheel partially back or the stay all day and then wheel all the way back out the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm contemplating that. I was doing a little bit of like very slim Google mapping of trying to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like for me to go, because I'm on Highway 80, I'm not off, like I live off of 80, right. Not off of Highway 50.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like if I come out on Tahoma, it's actually faster for me to drive up to Truckee and come down than drive down to 50 mm-hmm. and cut it back across.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Which I didn't think of because it actually takes a while to drive around Tahoe.
Uh-huh.
And so I was kind of, it's just interesting. So I was thinking about, you know, because if I drive all the way back and drive out, you know, Loon Lake, then go down Wentworth Springs and all the way back to, you know, Georgetown and out, you know, I don't know which one's actually going to be faster.
Yeah.
But if I'm at, you know, Rubicon Springs, that's going to be the question. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what my game plan is. I'm also tempted because it is Father's Day weekend and we don't have the kiddo this weekend, that I might just go drive it and like help them because it's a group from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of talked mm-hmm. about this on, you know, this was the spur of Monday's episode. So it's this group from out of town. Some of them have been on the Rubicon before,
okay,
but I don't think any of them know the Rubicon quite as well as I do.
Yeah.
So,
well, not many people do, Jimmy. Just saying.
I'll agree. There's only a few handful, you know, like 40 handfuls. Anyways, that my goal was once if they get to Rubicon Springs, going through Cadillac isn't going to be that difficult.
It's straightforward.
And I guess it's been filled in a little.
I mean, there was one section before, God, is it the V Notch or Chicken Rock? Not Chicken Rock. There's two waterfalls on Cadillac that you have to go up. One is called the V Notch. I think the other one's just a waterfall. I think the road kind of curves right before the V Notch, and right there it was really dug out three years ago, and they put a ton of fill rock in there.
Mm.
And so it's not. I mean, it wasn't difficult before.
Yeah.
It was just really off camber, more than what it was comfortable at all for anybody.
Got it.
And so now with the fill rock there, you just don't get off camber. But like they didn't do anything. There's three main obstacles on Cadillac, in my opinion. They didn't do anything to those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not entirely sure. I might come back a day early even.
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, just spend more time with my family or my wife at that point because I don't have the kiddo.
Is she not coming with you? Not going to come on the trip?
No, she can't. Cause we have the kiddo until Friday. I'm leaving on Thursday and she has some, the church stuff to do and, the kiddos and swim lessons and
okay.
Otherwise she probably would have
her drive the Tacoma to Observation Point and then hike down Cadillac, or you can drive up and pick her up at Observation, I guess.
Yeah. In theory.
Yeah.
So, I might just take them, help guide them to Rubicon Springs and spend the night and then say, see ya.
Yeah.
And maybe I even wheel back through the trail that way for fun, mm-hmm. you know, or I haven't done Cadillac in 10 years. I don't know. It's been so long since I've done Cadillac. Uh-huh. I always wheel to the springs and then they like, all right,
go back home.
Yeah. Head back. Because a lot of people that I wheel with have trailer their rigs.
Yeah.
And so we always choose to just continue to wheel. Like mm-hmm. I get more wheeling if I turn around.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I'm going to conclude, but if I'm able to make it time-wise, I'm definitely going to be at Rubicon Springs on Thursday night.
Nice.
So.
Very cool. Let me know. Once I get up in the area Friday sometime, I'll reach out to you on the ham radio and see where you're going, where you're doing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll just wheel back to you. I don't know.
I mean, that's always a possibility.
Yeah.
We can cuddle in the trailer.
Also, speaking of that, I know Echo Link was down.
Yes, it was.
Not speaking of cuddling in the trailer.
Oh,
speaking of
I was wondering
communication
if you were
on the trail.
Uh-huh.
Jeez, you're going to get me in trouble.
Uh-huh.
I heard Echo Link was down.
It was.
I've yet to be able to get Echo Link to accept me.
Really? Still?
Yeah.
Interesting. So they that's fascinating because
they don't accept my handle. Like when I type in my handle, it says nobody of that
KJ1MMY?
Yeah, that's not a... Nobody's assigned to that handle.
Interesting. Okay.
So
that's weird.
Maybe I'm using a fake handle.
Maybe. I would imagine that the DMV wouldn't let you pass it then. But then again, DMV has no clue what a ham radio even is.
I have the paperwork that says my... I have a vanity call sign. Like it had changed through the ham radio system.
Yeah.
But maybe I'll go back and try to find what my old call sign was and type that in to Echolink.
You could. The only downside to that is it's going to use that call sign whenever you log into repeaters. Mm. So whenever someone logs into a repeater, a computerized voice comes over and says KJ1MMY as you connected, right? Yeah. So it would just give whatever call sign you sign up as
K6TLR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to sign up as that? Put that one on? Uh-huh. That'd be fine.
And I'll just play radio music.
Oh, God. $10,000 bill shows up on my doorstep.
Right.
Jeez.
Perfect. So I would like to get, I want to get the assistant ham radio certified. Mm-hmm. And then I would like to be able to get Echo Link. We can have
her and the secretary go take a class together.
Yeah.
So,
and I would like to get Echo Link set up so that we can communicate.
Yeah. Yeah. Echo Link was nice. I was able to talk to everybody on the trail from here in my office. Granted, I could have done that with a radio too, but I was able to sit at my desk in my office.
You were able to communicate with everybody on the Rubicon Trail that was in the Mad Hatters group for the most part while you were sitting in Sacramento.
Yeah, and I mean, I could do that too with a radio. I don't need Echo Link to do that, but
okay.
But I had Echo Link up on my cell phone in my office while I was dealing with stuff.
Yeah. Joy repeaters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, I think that's about it. I did finish putting all the bushings and everything into the leaf springs, and the clamshell solved that problem too.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's good to know.
Or whatever the bearing separator tool.
Yeah.
Because that you used one of the images for one of the podcasts when we were talking about it, but the one side has that bigger flared out ring. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you can only push the bushing so far through. And then that clamshell like thing was able to pinch in there. And then I was able to push it the rest of the way through.
Nice.
So that worked out great. That solved that problem. And then everything went, once I flipped the other leaf spring around, everything leveled out as well.
Nice. So. That's cool. Yeah, I also got a 20-ton press.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah. So that'll help. I also took out one of my shims out of the rear axle.
Yeah.
On the leaf springs because I had a two pack.
Yeah.
I had two shims in there, and it was perfectly level and straight at the pinion, or the pinion was straight with the drive shaft.
Mm-hmm. Are you running a double cardan?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. While there's no load on the vehicle.
So when there's a load, the pinion goes up?
Yeah, it goes up.
Yeah.
So I removed 5 degrees, lowered it 5 degrees. So now hopefully it'll level out when I accelerate.
Yeah. And that way, as you're driving on the freeway at 50 miles an hour sustaining, hopefully it'll be in line with that double card now.
It'll still vibrate.
Yeah.
Because that it was before.
Yeah.
Right. But I don't know, man. I think I'm going to eventually go to a two-piece drive shaft.
Yeah.
And I think I'm really fingers crossed that when I go to a two-piece drive shaft and it's going to be a completely different drive shaft and probably rebuilt to some extent, that solves all the problems.
Hopefully.
I'm back to I'm circling the wagon. I'm back to start one. Like I've got a vibration. I need to change my drive shaft.
Yeah.
Because I've done everything else.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Nice, man. Well, cool. Good luck getting Bobcat up and running for Thursday.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll see you run into you out on the trail.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be a good time this weekend. Hopefully I can get up there. If I'm not, then I'm going to have the F-150 and my trailer up in the campsite, and I'll still have a radio, so we'll get in contact and see what you're up to.
Cool.
Yeah, man. Anything else for this episode?
Don't think so. Cool. Don't follow snailtrail4x4 _.
Yeah.
Don't click on any links that is sent from them, but do enter into the giveaways.
Yep. Enter the giveaway for this week. This week was the hex keys, as we talked about. So make sure you're getting that picture and posting it on social media with the correct hashtag, because that's how we're keeping track of them. So, keep your ear holes open for Monday's episode and all the goodies coming up for next week's giveaway.
Yes.
That's going to be a really fun one. I'm excited. That one I'm entering myself. I don't give a shit. I'm entering that one too.
All right.
So cool, man. If you guys have any questions, have any feedback for the show, please call them in 916-345-4744. We did get a couple of voicemails that from listeners that were supposed to go over to Wheeling Wine and Whiskey, just in case Wheeling Wine and Whiskey doesn't want to play anything that they're getting. I know that they're getting bombarded with voicemails because we're getting feedback about it from people.
People are sending us the voicemails as well. So yes, we know that they're getting some voicemails.
Yep.
And there's some good ones.
There's some really good ones. We may play Mike Klein's here on the next episode.
But, to raise the bar?
Raise the bar. Yeah, okay. Give everybody an idea of what's going on.
And I think, I mean, I don't think we put a time limit on it, but I think we should just do by the end of the month.
I think, yeah, by the end of tool month. Yep. Yeah.
So if you have yet to call into Wheeling Wine and Whiskey and leave a message with them being a bill collector, you have till the end of the month to do that. And then we'll figure out what you guys are going to win later. Mm-hmm. Gear Inch Corey already has it plotted, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's scheming without us. So cool, man. That's the phone number if you guys to call us. If you need to call Wheeling Wine and Whiskey, it's 408-800-5169, also known as our complaint line. I wonder if people just figured that out. If there's anybody out there listening that just figured out that I've been doing that. If you guys want to get a hold of us, how can they do that, Jimmy, other than our phone number?
Well, you can find us on Instagram, 4x4 Toyota Tyler, or snailtrail4x4.
No underscore.
Thank you. You can email us, jimmy or tyler@snailtrail4x4.com. Mm-hmm. Did you already say the phone number?
Yes.
So that one, 916-345-4744.
Mm-hmm.
You can find Tyler or his the secretary over at Morflate.
Mm-hmm.
You can find my customer service agent over at Snail Armor on Instagram. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into Snail Armor. I have some questions for you on Monday's episode.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know. Is there any other way that people can get a hold of us?
Bat signals.
You can comment on a post on Irate.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was a big change I wanted to announce real quick. Austin made Irate even more user-friendly. He's into the UX over there. And so it's instead of having to go to the support donate tab at the top of the website now, you can just go straight to the Snail Trail forum, and all of the payment options are there on the right-hand side of the forum board.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice. Really nice, streamlined. It works out really well. If you're accessing it on mobile, it'll be at the bottom of the page rather than the right-hand side. So
excellent.
Yeah.
All right,
that's it. That's all enough. I got, man.
Yeah.
Cool. What do you got for like final words of, words of discouragement today? Let's do that, huh?
Screw people that are trying to copy things that are taken a while to build.
And with that, my friends, keep crawling. How do snails fight?
I don't know. Slime each other?
They slug it out.
They slug it out. Not bad.
I thought you had submitted that one.
No, I should have.
I was like, oh, Jimmy submitted this one.
Oh, that's good. Okay. I'll have to remember that.
Mm-hmm.